Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 15th of July, 2020. On the podcast today, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bazant Resources, BZT, ticker there. And Colin talks about the historical drilling information discovered as part of the due diligence review at the Hope Copper Gold Project in Namibia. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about iron ore, copper and Arc Minerals. Plus, I have two lists for you, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. You can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, and a bunch of blogs and articles and videos, podcasts. In fact, there's one there on Galliford Try, confident in future of the business. There's an interview there with Chris Watlin. In fact, Paul Hill did that, talks about the economic recovery, amongst other things. There's Air Partner enters Australian market. And as always, of course, there's COVID-19 index. And top rise of the day is N4 Pharma. Up 7.7%, 4.2 pence. And the biggest fall of theirs, Himagenix. That's down 9.44% to 8.15 pence. Okay, check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bazant Resources. BZT is the ticker there. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for being in, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, and you got some news out. RNS due diligence and strategy update read the Hope Copper Gold Project. And you've got some grades here, and we'll get into that in a bit. But before we do, just for people not familiar, just summarise Bazant, if you could, Colin.
Well, Bazant is essentially copper gold focused company, and it's got the mixture in most of its assets. Essentially, there's the Argentinian Eureka project. There's the Kalengwa project in Zambia. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's this latest acquisition and the Philippines, where the big porphyry copper gold. So really, it's a copper gold mission. And I think the market and our shareholders and would-be shareholders realize that we're monetizing the Philippine project. We made an announcement about that the other week. And of course, this acquisition is a major acquisition in a very, very mining-friendly country, in a place where I and the rest of the board are used to working. So we look forward to this project, and of course we've announced some very good results.
Yeah, well, let's get into some of those copper grades. Expand on some of them, if you could, Colin.
Well, I mean, you know, in this day and age, I mean, where do we start? I mean, the average grade now being worked around the world. Has dropped over 15 years from 1.13% copper down to 0.62. Now, if you look at some of these grades here, you're looking at 23.31 at 1.59. You're looking at 10 meters at 5.72. You're looking at 7.11 at 5. These are big grades, and these intersection widths are very impressive, extremely impressive. Yeah. So, you know, we're delighted with them.
Yeah, delighted with them.
And, you know, and it sort of interrogated the all of the information we've got. This has been, this probably has been well drilled by very respectable country companies. JCI was there, you know, the Anglo-American, and we can't call it a subsidiary, it was a listed company in its own rights. But this has been the subject of some very, very intense drilling. And so anything you see in terms of resource can be relied on. And of course, there's 150, I guess we'll get into that later, but there's 150 kilometers that they didn't test, didn't look at, which of course attracted me to the project.
Because it is
what it is now, but boy, the potential to make it much bigger is excellent.
Yeah, well, you say copper gold there. There's not a lot of mention of the gold here. What's happening?
Well, that's right. In the early announcement, there wasn't much mention of gold. But, you know, again, let's go to a couple of the olds. When you look at 7.65 metres at 5.32 copper and 1.37 gold, I mean, a gram of gold is worth about $60 now. Mm. So you've got about $80, $90 worth of gold there, I mean, in that particular hole, which will do more than pay for the working cost. Mm. Again, you see 1.73 at 4.4 metres. That's, you know, 1.73 grams of gold will carry without 7.79% of copper. Again, alongside that 23 meters, you've got 0.23 gold and 1.14 at 7.11. So these are serious gold grades. I mean, it would almost stack up as a gold mine. And you have to look, you know, alongside it is these excellent copper results. And the thicknesses are good. It's not as though he's scrambling around in about a meter and a half. So this is really good stuff.
Yeah. So what's next then, Colin?
Well, next is why are we there? Well, we're there because we don't think the gold was taken into consideration. You know, we live in a time now where gold and copper is very popular around the world. Turn the clock back, and of course, when a lot of this work was done, that gold and copper was seen as a bit of a nuisance metallurgically. And the gold price hasn't always been, as you know, the gold price hasn't always been $1,700-$1,800 and it has been very volatile, especially when some of this work was done. So what's next is Gorob next door to the Ope mine. That that shows hardly any gold, when we know from the archives that we've been through that there's gold shows exactly like there is at the Ope mine. So I think the first thing we're going to do is we're going to put a half a dozen holes down, and we're going to prove that the gold is an association of similar ratios to what we've got at Ope. So our gold inventory, that will bring our gold inventory up very, very quickly. And the value of the Gorob section, the Gorob mine, will be bought up alongside the Ope section, the Ope mine. And then, of course, we've got 150 kilometres, which for a reason that whoever I talked to, and these were people who worked for the previous companies, there were no test work. And the signature, the it lends itself very well to geophysics, IP and whatever you, lends itself very, very well to it. And, you know, airborne geophysics was outside the domain of the junior a few years ago. That was the top end of expense, and you just don't do it. And anyway, it wasn't that effective. Now, the story is entirely opposite. It's extremely effective, and we can get an helicopter airborne EM for about $110,000. Dollars, so you know you're not spending millions of dollars, 150 max, and we can cover the areas we want to cover, and you can bet your butt. Well, there's been small showings and small mines over that 150 kilometers, and traditionally the junior explorer like ourselves would have gone where the mines have been before and then start drilling. Pretty inefficient. Not a good use of shareholders' money, so I'm rather open with this exercise that we fly it and we actually define many targets, and obviously some of them will be near surface as well. So that will give us the benefit of maybe open cash projects. and it will certainly lift that copper and gold inventory a stack. So what are we going to do next? Gaurab, we're going to drill some holes to obviously prove up the gold is there, as it is in the Ope section. And we're going to look at that 150 kilometres with a view to growing this deposit. You know, it needs growing, and grow it we will.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest, copper and gold, it's the right space, isn't it, at the moment, you know?
Isn't it just, and I mean, if you want to pick two metals to be in, you can't beat copper and gold, quite frankly. So that makes Byzant an extremely good story, and a good place to be. Mm-hmm. And in Namibia, you know, it's been overlooked. There's been some good mines there. There's been some big mines there. The majors have been there. The juniors have been there, and it's good jurisdiction.
Yeah. Okay, Colin. Well, listen, as always, if someone's listening to the progress you're making there and liking where you're at, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, it's a diverse group. It's in the right metals, copper and gold. We're monetizing the Philippines, which is a long, long way away. We're concentrating our efforts in Southern Africa, and we'll be doing the same with our Eureka. We'll be working on it and monitoring, getting best value out of that. So you've got a copper gold story through the group. You've got a new acquisition, which is at a stage to be grown significantly, with a known resource which can be grown significantly, and let's face it, at a 2 million thereabouts market capitalization, to join the company is extremely cheap price of entry versus potential value of assets. Mm-hmm. That would be my three, and I know that there's probably a bit of concern that we talk about due diligence. The due diligence has finished on this project, and we're now into that final bit of administration of where the share certificates go, transfers and all of that thing. So the project is finite in place, and we're very, very pleased with the acquisition. So in summary, good projects, right space, copper gold, and a cheap entry price.
Yeah, marvellous stuff, Colin. Good to chat to you as always, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks a lot.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yes, very good. Thank you.
I want to ask you something. There's obviously a bit of a gathering together, a ganging up on China, which I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but it seems to be happening. You know, all of a sudden we've had a turnaround in Britain on Huawei. They're not having now Huawei in 5G network, which, 6 months ago they said it was fine. And apparently Trump, he said himself, he said, I personally got involved in this and called other countries saying, if you have Huawei in your networks, we're not going to deal with you. So, and is that spilling over? Is a bit of a Cold War thing happening? Is it spilling over into resource and prices? What's happening there? Because, of course, China is the hungriest country in the world as far as resources are concerned. Is there any knock-on from that as yet?
So far, if you look at the import-export numbers, China has regained a lot of its lost growth. Certainly regained that faster than anyone else, but of course it went into the coronavirus lockdown quicker and probably managed it better than most other nations. So no, we are not seeing much of a knock-on impact between the conflict between the US and China. In reality, it's the US and their allies and China. And the rhetoric is ratcheting up, and the stakes, I think, are getting higher, because the US is saying no to China, no, you can't have all of the South China Seas that you're trying to claim. There are other countries here that that have a right to portions of the South China Seas that they've been fishing in and are quite close to their shores. For example, the Philippines is very close to some of these islands that the Spratly Islands that are being claimed by China, and so it's quite a serious conflict. And the US is standing up for justice and rightfulness, allegedly, And of course, they don't want the Chinese spying on everything going on in the West. So they've said no to Huawei products and technology. And of course, some of this, I'm sure, is in order to protect their own industries that are coming through with 5G technology as well. But remember, it's the Chinese state has been funding and sponsoring the Huawei rollout of technology, and of course the technology has been developed allegedly in work done with the Chinese military. So one has to be pretty careful about that. I mean, we wouldn't expect our MOD to be working with Vodafone or BT, for example. Although one never knows quite what happens behind the scenes, but that's kind of not how things are done in the West, and we don't really want the spies having the ability to look into everything that we do, even if it wouldn't benefit them very much.
Yeah, I do feel you can't trust the Chinese government. There's so many things that have happened, even figures, GDP, but especially over coronavirus. I mean, that's ridiculous, the amount of fatalities they reckon they had. They revised them up to 4,000. And it started in a city with a population of 11 million. And there's probably people walking around with that sort of infection for about a month before it was discovered it was a new infection. And yet, I looked at the average of the top 10 countries for deaths per 1,000. And if they had the average China of all the top 10 countries have been affected by deaths, they'd have over 500,000 deaths by now, but they've claimed to have 4,000. And I think there's no way that can be true. And so there's a lot of me thinking, I don't trust what they're trying to do. They could be... they've got the power for world domination. What they do once they get there, I don't know. So it's a bit worrying, is it, where they are? And then, of course, there's going to be, like I said, a Cold War. I think it's going to be ramped up. There's a Trump coming towards the elections as well. He said now he's not interested. I can't believe what he says, really. He said he's not interested in talking trade with them at the moment. He said as soon as we signed that agreement, phase one, and the ink wasn't dry, they let loose this coronavirus, like they did it on purpose. So he's speaking very harshly. But of course, China do need to buy stuff. I don't know where it's going to end, but it doesn't seem at the moment like it's not a smooth path, is it?
Well, there is a clause in the trade agreement that allows China to disregard parts or maybe even all the agreement in the event of a pandemic. I'm not sure at what point that clause was slipped into the agreement, but it has given them a bit of a get out, and as always, they found an excuse not to adhere to their side of the agreement. Trump, of course, we don't like the rhetoric that comes from Trump, but in reality, he is reflecting Republican Party policy in the States. And in fact, I hear from contacts of mine in the US that the Democrats are actually remarkably fully behind the Republicans when it comes to trade war issues. So I don't see this having a huge impact on us and what we do. If anything, it probably serves to help lift the gold price a bit further because it creates more uncertainty.
Yeah.
But there is, at the end of the day, the Chinese are producing so much that they need to export, and the Americans do need to import a lot of products that they don't produce themselves. So we are seeing trade flows starting to return to normal. We're seeing there's a lot going on. China is clearly stimulating its own economy internally, and is clearly stimulating consumption internally, which is something the US had been asking them to do for many, many years. And China has finally woken up and finally got a good reason for doing that. And they are trying to address the problem of large numbers of unemployed migrant workers, which they need to do in order to preserve stability. And the Communist Party sees that as a very important thing to do. Otherwise, it would see that as a threat to itself.
I'm very wary of the Chinese government. Okay, and let's look at some commodity prices. What are they looking like? Are they taking a knock at the moment, or
No, I mean, they're fantastic, and we're a little bit suspicious about some of the trade in copper. There was an awful lot of orders coming over from China in copper futures, and this was reported to me by somebody who's trading in the copper market very actively, and so the market was, although there were these orders were coming over, traders were saying the market was relatively thin. So people are wary and suspicious as to what's going on, and maybe they feel there may be some manipulation in the copper market. In fact, it's fair to say the markets are always being manipulated by one person or another. It's just a question of who's able to manipulate more than someone else. Mm. But iron ore prices, which are really not particularly manipulated, are very much higher than normal. We're up at $109 a ton for iron ore. It's partially because of problems in Brazil with shipments, but what it tells us is that Chinese traders are competing to buy shipments of iron ore out of Australia. That is driving physical prices higher and futures prices on the back of that. That in turn is driving the price of Rio Tinto, BHP, Anglo American, and Glencore ever higher, which is very pleasing to see. I think some of the most solid dividend payers in the UK market are going to be these large mining companies because of the enormous cash flow coming off their iron ore sales. So this is very big business, and I think a lot of that iron ore is going into stimulus projects in China. China Railways looking to build another 4,400 kilometers of rail this year. Already an enormous amount. I think it was $46 billion worth of capital spend in the first half by China Railways. Makes anything that we do in this country look really rather pathetic.
Yeah.
So they are pressing on. There's lots of local city-sponsored or city-inspired housing construction schemes going on. There's going to be an awful lot of flood damage repairs that have to happen in China, and the government will help with that. And I think a lot of new flood barriers will have to be built along the Yangtze. And the area of the Yangtze below the Three Gorges Dam, well, it extends about 2,800 kilometers. So it's an awful lot of river to shore up, shall we say. And there are certain key cities on that, not far down from the Three Gorges Dam, and one of those is Wuhan, which seems to be at the crossroads of just about everything these days.
Yeah. What about copper's doing well, isn't it?
Yeah, copper is at $4,800 a ton. Many people didn't think it would get anywhere like this price this year, because conventional wisdom was that the coronavirus would cause a massive fall in global GDP. That slower growth or that loss of economic activity would be bad for copper. But the assumption was that the mines would carry on without any interruption. And what we've seen is been quite a lot of interruption to various mines, particularly in Latin America. That's interrupted supplies at a time when Chinese smelters have been competing to buy copper concentrates, particularly out of Latin America again. That plus the infrastructure projects that are being planned and built at the moment has been driving copper prices higher. But as I say, I think some of the recent run in copper may be more inspired by some opportunistic Chinese traders rather than actual physical buying activity, which we think has dried up a bit. But again, having said that, copper inventories in warehouses are rather low. That's something worth taking note of. Although of course there will be inventories outside warehouses. We certainly saw a lot of restocking of copper and other metals as China emerged from its lockdown. So that's a good sign. So I don't think we're going to see metals pull back massively, but I think it may be that the present run is a bit overdone and it's time for metals to pause and rest a little bit. But the great thing is it is lifting, it's certainly lifting the profits of Glencore, Rio's, BHP and Anglo American. And that feeds through into the juniors as well. And so certainly with all the stimulus projects, not only are steel and iron ore prices going up, but we also saw vanadium prices go up last week, which is nice for Bushveld Minerals.
Yeah, get in there, John. And talking about copper, nice little RNS from ARC Minerals yesterday.
Very nice. ARC is one of our house stocks and certainly one of my personal favourites, as I bought a few shares in it at the last placing. which is rather unusual. And they've signed an exclusivity with Anglo American. So Anglo American get 6 months to look at all the data. The ARC are going to carry on drilling on various projects while that is going on. We know that they have copper at the Shazaya West project. I went down there a couple of years ago to walk over the ground and look at the pilot plant that they built. So they might be able to process some of the material from Shazaya in the sort of demonstration scale production plant that they put together. It's relatively small, but it works if you feed reasonable grade material into it, which would be nice for cash flow. Nick von Schoending, who is the chief executive of ARC, he used to work at Anglo American. He worked with the chairman and the chief executive for many, many years. So he has intimate knowledge of the workings of Anglo, and he knows many of the people there very, very well. And so I think it's very nice for him to bring Anglo back into Zambia after so many years. Mm. Anglo walked away from Zambia when they had a lot of issues, mainly to do with water in underground mines back in the 90s, and the cost of pumping was higher then than it is now. So Anglo walked away. In fact, Anglo American held these licenses back then. So for Anglo to return to Zambia is a big step for them. Mm. We saw Rio Tinto signing an agreement with another Zambian copper play called Midnight Sun not long ago, and we believe that Rio's and BHP are also interested in the project at ARC. So it looks interesting, it supports my view that anything in Zambia is a relatively good investment.
Yeah, wow. So this here, right, I know nothing about the details of this, but obviously you'll have more sort of knowledge. So they signed a confidentiality agreement, 6 months exclusivity. Now, at what level? Obviously, you won't sign that without looking at something. They've already had a look over the results, I suppose. So they must be quite interested to sign this, mustn't they? And if you could put a percentage on it, a deal will get done in some way. Would it be above 50% or would it be below 50%? Where are we at this moment in time on this?
Well, look, as I see it, ARC doesn't want to be beholden to any single mining company. It wants to ensure that if somebody does want to take over the company, that there's a proper competition for that. Because what you don't want to do is sign a deal where Anglo American gets 75% of everything, and then that shuts out the potential for any other major to come in with a competing bid. So, yes, Anglo get 6 months to have a look at it all. There's confidentiality on both sides. ARC Minerals will not have shown them all the exploration data just yet, although quite a lot is in the public domain. But Anglo get to put their geologists on the ground. They have a geologist who used to work for First Quantum Minerals, who I believe was successful there. So I'm sure he was successful, otherwise he wouldn't be with Anglo American these days. Mm. So it's an opportunity for the majors to have a really good look at a very exciting part of the Zambian copper belt. It's just south of some major new discoveries in the DRC in recent years. And it's a very interesting place. It's if we go back 20 years ago, this would have been seen as quite a remote and difficult to operate in area. But since First Quantum Minerals built the Trident project and the Sentinel mine very close by, and ARC Minerals' licenses, I think, are about 40 kilometers from that, and we drove through some of the First Quantum mine gates when we went through there. So it's now so much easier to operate in than it used to be, and the area is opening up. And if we refer to Zambia very briefly, Zambia is a country where it works under an English legislation. The rule of law clearly works very well, and the country is relatively fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. So are you saying a chance of an agreement is quite high? It's probable, above 50%, or it's just possible?
Difficult to say. I think it's probable because we see good copper grades in a lot of the drilling. Mm. What Anglo, the question that Anglo will be asking is, well, are these deposits big enough for a major company like Anglo or Rio or BHP to want to get involved? They could, these projects could turn out to be sensible, useful copper mines, but just not quite of the scale that a major wants to get involved with. Mm. So it's, or it could be that there are a number of smaller deposits, but when you add them together and put them and start to feed them through to a central processing plant, that they actually do become big enough for a major. We don't quite know yet. I mean, it's very difficult to find really big world-class copper projects. You've got SolGold with one in Ecuador. You've got the guys at Ivanhoe who listed in Canada with some very big stuff in the DRC. And those projects in the DRC are so close to this in geologically and in terms of distance. So this is a very logical place for the majors to be looking in right now. But it does require an awful lot of geological investigation. It requires boots on the ground, geophysics, geochemistry, and at the end of the day, the truth, the drilling with the truth machine, as we say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff, but it's good. And the share price went let's look at it, jumped about 37%, I think, on that. And
I still see ARC Minerals as a cheap stock. I think there's opportunity for people to make multiples of their money on this.
Yeah, do your own research, everyone. You know, it's high risk, but that validation, pretty much, isn't it, from a major, says a lot. There's something there worth looking at, and they wouldn't waste their time otherwise if they weren't, had a high amount of confidence in that resource, I suppose.
I think the clever thing is that no single major company is able to claim, to grab the whole company or the whole project without making a proper takeover offer and without that being open to competition from the other majors. So that's where Nick von Schoending is trying to keep things strategically. And that's the important thing. If Anglo American wants to own the company, it's got to come in and buy it.
Yeah, yeah. Marvellous stuff. John, thanks for that. Anything else?
I think that's the
key. You mentioned Bushveld, didn't you? That's the key there, but...
I mean, there was news from Kenmare Resources yesterday talking about ilmenite and rutile production, which fell quite heavily in the first half, but is expected to recover. So let's hope they don't have any big cyclones to make the year worse for them. But prices for ilmenite and rutile, or certainly ilmenite, held up remarkably well. I think just ahead of the coronavirus lockdown, lots of people went out and bought white paint. So I'm sure everybody's got gleaming houses these days. Yeah. And I think that has held up demand for pigments and for ilmenite feedstock. So I've heard that other mining companies are pretty busy trying to catch up with ilmenite production following the lockdown and trying to avoid disappointing their customers who've been quite short of titanium dioxide feedstock, which is what comes from ilmenite, for some time. So combination of a tight market and mining companies trying to catch up could see prices go higher, and that would be good for Blue Jay Mining, for example.
Marvellous stuff. John, thanks for that, Philip, and we'll speak next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five, Greatland Gold, no move at 12 pence, 12.1. At four, ARC Minerals, I talked about it with John on the podcast, down 6%, 2.77. At three, Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals, down 9.4% at 8.15. It's had a massive rise, though. At two, Velocis, down 0.25% at 6.48 pence. And at one, biggest, most followed company today is Trafalgar Group. Of course, Chris Akers has taken a position in that. Shut up when he's done that. It's going to hydroponics, which is a growth of plants, food, without soil, mainly in sort of water-based kind of stuff. As you can tell, I'm an expert. It's up 4.3% at 0.24 pence. Top five most liked, the most read RNSs are as follows. At five, let me update this list here. At five, it's ARC Minerals, exclusivity agreement with Anglo American. We talked about that in the podcast. At four, Hemogenix, US subsidiary, change of name. At two, ARC Minerals, direct dealing. And at one is SIG, PLC. Okay, so that's top 5% ROS. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening, by the way. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.